A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back. Another episode of DNMs with Dean. Now, I'm very excited to bring you this episode. I sit down with Tori Singleton. Now, me and Tori met a little while ago. She actually records a podcast out of this very studio, Raw Reality. Now, I always love sitting down with athletes or past athletes and kind of picking their mind apart because I can see so much of myself in them and what they've been through and how they've overcome that. Now, Tori is definitely an athlete that has gone through a lot and has found the tools she needed to then overcome the challenges and be the person she knows she should be and is now. Now, Tori was in acrobatics. Well, she was actually in netball, acrobatics, a little bit of tennis as well, but acrobatics was her main focus. She actually went and competed in the World Championships as a junior in 2018 and then again as a senior in 2019, where she actually got a silver medal. Now, through that time, she dealt with serious health issues. She dealt with stress fractures, tears, kind of everything got thrown at her. And she kind of got put in this position where doctors pretty much said, if you keep doing this, it's too harsh on your health and you should pull away. Now, look at this as you will. She soldiered on and ended up going to compete and getting that silver medal. But her body was so run down that after that, she had to look within and find the tools that she needed to actually become the person she knows she should be. And since then, she's met a boyfriend that helped her down a health path to living better, eating better, sleeping better, pretty much all things that she obviously should have been doing as an athlete, but kind of needed to go through the hardship to then figure out what to do after competing. Now, since then, she's moved to the Gold Coast. She's kind of changed her whole life around and is now this vibrant, uplifting, positive person that has been through something hard and now wants to share that through mentoring other kids, other people, to show them how they think they can live a better, happier, more fulfilled life. So really enjoyed this chat. We sat down for almost 2 hours and went in depth into her story and where she's going now and what she wants to do. And I really think you guys will enjoy this one. So I hope you guys like it. Before we get into it, quick word from the sponsors. If you are sick of a heap of tablets in the morning, get your morning, oh my God, I can't talk at the moment. Get your morning routine started right with AG1. Now, one scoop of AG1 is full of 75 whole grain ingredients. And it just gets your morning started right. It gets your day started right. It's good for gut health, immunity, all those good things. We're going into colder weather now. You want to boost your body up. You want to feel good. So AG1 is the one for you. I'm going to throw a link in the description. 5 free travel packs. Your free supply of vitamin D. That'll get your day started right. And everything started right. Sorry, that intro was a bit clunky, but we're just going to go with it because I think, you know, showing that things can be clunky is good as well. It's not always polished, but without further ado, here's Tori. See you guys. Tori's story. Welcome to your own somewhat podcast.
Yeah, I'm just going to pretend it's my own.
You can just own it. Just halfway through this, you're going to flip.
I'll take the reins.
It's actually Tori Singleton, but we like Tori's story just got such a good ring to it.
Yeah, no one really knows my last name. People sometimes ask if it's actually Story. It's definitely not.
Yeah, I get asked if mine's Mykonos sometimes, and it's just like...
I did think that at the start, so I was like, that's really cool.
I kind of want to change it. I think it's better.
Yeah, I agree.
Lucas is bland and plain and boring.
We need spice.
Should we change the Story in Mykonos?
Yeah. I actually would.
It does go well.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And I know my brothers will carry on my last name, so it's fine. Don't worry about it.
When you get married anyway, just change it to Tori Story when you get married.
Yeah.
It's going to change anyway.
Exactly.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I'm rather jealous. You're in the fun, spinny white chair.
If you see me spinning around on the video, mind your own business.
I always tell the guests they can pick their seat. And before I even asked you, you already said you were sitting on the white because you already knew. Black attire.
Yes.
But yeah, it's your show today.
Yeah.
Well, it is always seems to be your show.
That's the Tori Story show.
But we want to get into your story because I found it quite interesting. And I also found it very relatable with kind of the, I guess, negatives you had to go through and then you pulling positives out of that.
Yeah.
But before we jump too far into it, I kind of wanted, because I looked at your, you actually did a post and it kind of almost talked about your bit by bit your life, and it was kind of a good little starting point. But you obviously, you grew up in a big family, but it was quite divided. What was that like growing up?
So I was born in Perth, Western Australia. And obviously my mum and dad, and my dad's actually 11 years younger than my mum, and they met many years ago through football. But I had, so my mum had two kids before me, to another husband, and then met my dad and had me. And then they split up when I was three. And so basically from there, my mum and I moved down to country Victoria, where my mum's side's from. And then since then, my dad's remarried twice and had three more
kids. Where was it in
country
Vic? Because I heard you talk about Albury.
Yeah, my family's from like Albury and Myrtleford.
Do you know where Wurundjeri is?
I feel like
Beechworth?
Yeah.
I'm from Beechworth.
No way.
Yeah.
I feel like you meet people and you're like, you're from country Victoria, and it just like, you just know.
Yeah.
I feel like we'd have like mutual friends, I reckon.
100%.
That's wild.
When you said you would like do car racing in Albury,
yeah,
I was like, what the?
Yeah.
And then it kind of, clued on. So
yeah, my mum's side's from Albury, which is just wild. But yeah, so basically... I was like full time with my mum, and I would see my dad like once a year. So I'd fly to Perth every year by myself since I was age of five to see my dad's side of the family. So my mum's side and both dads, like they're quite big family either sides with like heaps of cousins and stuff. The one thing I am really grateful for is that my mum and dad are very good friends, not straight off the bat of their divorce, but over time they've grown to be really good friends. And I definitely think that's made it easier, I guess, on having that divided family. And I have great relationships with both of them, which just makes it so much better. But it does suck that Perth just feels like another country. And it just takes so
far
long.
Away,
So seeing them once a year, it definitely sucks. And I do have three little brothers that I feel like I've missed so much of their childhood. And then as we'll get into, like my acrobatics career took up so much time that I even more just missed out on so much of their life. But in the same breath, I wouldn't change it.
So they're still all over in Perth.
Yeah. So I still only see them like once a year.
How was that going back like to and fro growing up? Was that stressful, or did that kind of weigh on you just not having like, I guess, that stability going back and forth all the time?
I vividly remember just always just wanting them to be together. Just being like, why can't my mum and dad just be together? I feel like everyone in school just had their happy-go-lucky families. And I was like, why have my dad's side like on the other side of the country? And I think it was really tough at this like beginning because I didn't understand, like obviously I was three when they got divorced and you just don't get it. And I was quite a challenging child, my mum would say. And I kind of led my mum onto her own spiritual journey because I was so challenging, and she really had to learn to parent me differently to my older siblings because I was just quite difficult. But it definitely took a toll just because I always just wanted that close-knit family, and I would always go over to my friend's house and they would have that. And I think I've definitely carried that throughout my life, and I've done so much work around the childhood trauma kind of things. But it was challenging. But I think now being older, I'm like, my parents do not suit each other. They could not be further from separate people.
It's funny when you have that realization, hey, when my, like my parents split, but I was older, so it wasn't as, didn't affect me as much. But then they've both got new partners now.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they split, I was like, I wish you guys, obviously you want your parents together. It's just, I think human nature.
Yeah.
But then they've got new partners and I'm like, you guys are probably actually better off that way. And you're just happy for them as people, not your own selfish, like, I want you together for me.
Yeah.
Even though you kind of want them together for them as well. But once you realize they're like, oh, you're not actually meant to be.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a freeing feeling.
100%. And both my mom and dad have, well, my dad's been married 3 or 4 times. No. Yeah. And then my mom's been like quite similar 3 or 4 times. So I think just kind of growing up through different partners with my dad and mom's side, like it's been really challenging to kind of see how I can have one happy relationship, if that makes sense. So a huge goal of mine, and like if you listen to my podcast or my channel, like all I guess I want to do is be a mom and have a really beautiful family. Non-divided family is like my biggest goal, but there's been so many, I guess, limiting beliefs around the fact that I can't have that, or I look for things to go wrong because that's all I've seen through my parents' like relationships.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard this thing, and most of the things we strive towards as adults is something that is a trauma based as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that you saw a divided family and you're like, I want my solid, close-knit family.
Yeah.
So that's your big goal now, is just to kind of bring that together. What are the like limiting beliefs that you feel like you see in relationships that
I think, well, I also had, I had a past relationship. I was with my ex for 6 years and that had a very terrible ending. It's all like fine now, but in the moment it was horrible. But I think with that and then seeing my parents' relationships, I've always just been like, I'm always looking for the fact that I'm going to get hurt, or I'm always looking to protect myself. And I find that I tend to make up scenarios to then protect myself for when it does happen. Mm. So I'll bring things in from the past because I've got evidence of that. And then I'm like, okay, how is that going to play out? And then how can I protect myself from that happening? If that it does happen, I'm good. So it's been a big learning curve, and especially with my partner Jackson now, like he's been through a lot with me, but he's really held me in all of that and being like, be open and like connect, communicate with me so that he can understand it, because he's had a very tight-knit family growing up. So he doesn't really see what it's like from my end. So it's just being able to like openly communicate, but definitely just feeling like I'm always going to get hurt, or I just have to prove that I'm good. I'm confident, or I'm independent, or
it's like you're bracing for it.
Yeah. In a way. And then I cause the situation because I self-sabotage all the time, but we're working through it. It's definitely a process, but yeah.
I think being conscious of it though.
Yeah.
And 100%. Seeing it is such a good, like you're already in that healing process.
Yeah.
That you see it and you go, I don't want to keep doing this. How do I fix this?
Yeah. And having such good support around me, like my mom always says, like, don't, or my dad always says, don't do what I did, and like always says, learn from my mistakes, which is cool. But then also just to have like Jackson being really supportive, and my best friend Lily, and just all my close friends around me are just so supportive of that when I am going through, like if something comes up and it kind of triggers me, they're all like, no, it's fine, like let's talk about it. And it's never like pushed under the rug, because that doesn't really help anyone.
Yeah, you actually talk through.
Yeah.
I was going to say, what's it like? Because when I was an athlete, I always felt it was hard to kind of relate your lifestyle and what you did to a, in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Because it's, to understand an athlete, you kind of have to be one.
Yeah.
And you're obviously dating Jackson, who plays for, who does he play for?
Southport Sharks in the VFL.
So he plays for them, and he obviously sees you training and you see him training, and you obviously have a good dynamic. What's that like, being in a relationship with another athlete and kind of understanding the distance you need, and also like the personal space you kind of need to do your thing?
It's definitely interesting, I think, now because I'm not in the competitive realm. I think if I was competing whilst he was also training and playing games, it'd be really different. But I think, like, because being an athlete myself, I understand, you know, training has to come first, it's a priority. But I think because I'm in such a different space in my life that I'm like, oh, can we just like do this? I'm like, no, like this is his dream, and I had mine, I got to do that, and now I'm taking it in a different direction. But I'm just like, I want him to succeed, I want him to achieve his goal, and I will help, like, happily do what he needs to do to get there. He's had a challenging career himself, so I'm like, whatever I can do to support you, because I think knowing how much a sport can mean to someone, like, my sport was everything to me. Like, I would have sacrificed everything and anything for it. So when he's going through anything, or he's like, no, like, this has to come first, I'm like, I fully get it. Even if I get a bit defensive at the start, I'm like, no, I get it, it's fine. But it is really cool. I think if I had had him back when I was competing, it also would have been amazing. But yeah.
How did relationships go when you were competing then? Because I know from personal experience, to chase a dream to the highest level, relationships normally take the brunt of that.
Yeah. In terms of romantic relationships, or all of it?
Family, romantic, all of it. It just, yeah. They come, like you said, they come second.
Yeah, they definitely did. So like I said, I was living with my mum full time with her. It was just her and I for many, many years, because my older siblings are like 15 and 18 years older. So they moved out quite early. So it was just mum and I, and she was like a full-time working mum to support me and the career that I'd chosen, which was really expensive. But it was definitely challenging, because I come from a very athletic background. Like, all my mum's siblings, she's one of five, they all did a sport of some sort. They were all very successful in what they do. All my cousins are very athletic, so they all understood it. But I think when it came down to very serious events that I was like, I actually can't miss training, there were some times where they were like, why can't you just like take a night off or take the weekend off? But it was like, if that's going to set me back to get to the Worlds, like, I don't want to miss that. Like, I had this one window to make my goal happen. And as much as it's like, you know, there's family experiences that may never come back, there's always going to be, there's so many ways to look at it, but I just felt like I'm only going to have this one window as an athlete. And if I miss this opportunity, I won't get it back.
Is there any regret you have in missing something that you...
No.
You were happy with what you achieved from doing it?
Yeah, I would go back and do it again. I just loved my sport so much.
Did you find, though, sometimes balancing it, it's like you've got a family event and, okay, you might miss the gym or you might miss a training session, but in that family event, it can kind of almost give you more energy because you can see people you might not see normally, and you might, and almost that can charge you up. Did you find those in occasions you almost need – to like shut off to then obviously excel?
Yeah, I think it's like the moment you step back from it, you can almost like just have that gratitude for what you do and how good you are at it, or like how much effort you are putting in, and then to just like take your mind off it for a bit, because it's probably something you just always think about, like, how can you do better, what more can you do? So then to just like take a step back, be with the friends and family who do support you, and just kind of recharge you in that way to then go back and go even harder again.
Did you find that hard to do though? Like take a...
Like, I always felt guilty. Yeah, I always felt guilty for taking time off, because I never wanted to set myself back, even if it was like one night of training. And I think when I was younger, we were made to feel like one training session missed is like massive. Whereas now I'm like, no, one training session is probably beneficial to like reset your body and rest and recover, which is something massive that I've learned over my like transformational journey. But yeah, it was definitely hard when I was younger, because I was like sport all the time. And I went to a sports school as well. My whole life was sport. I played like pretty high level netball up until I think it was like year 9. And then I had to decide between the two, because my mum was a netballer and that's all she wanted me to do. And my dad wanted me to play tennis. So I didn't choose either of them. But yeah, I got into...
What did you want to do?
Acro. Yeah. I loved netball. It was fun. But acro just... Standing on stage, there's just nothing like it.
How is that pull between parents, their idea of your direction, and then your want and your needs? Was that a bit of a to-or-fro?
It was tough. My mum was a really good netballer, and we grew up around like country footy in country Victoria, and country footy netball, like there's just nothing like it. Like, it's the vibe, the energy, and my whole family, from like my mum's parents all the way down to like our like cousins and stuff, were all involved in the Ovens in Murray. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah.
I'm from... How could
there.
You not? Yeah.
I'm from there, yeah. I played football in that. Yeah,
yeah, really. Okay. So you get it. So that's, yeah, so our weird family was heavily involved in... My mum coached at like 7 or 8 different clubs in the Ovens in Murray in netball, and played in it herself. So she really wanted me to push for that, and she coached me through netball when I was younger, and then I had really incredible coaches through my sports academy at school in netball. And then, well, tennis didn't last long. I didn't even give that.
Sorry, Dad.
Sorry, Dad. I didn't really give that a red hot crack. It was either tennis or golf from my dad, purely because it was good money. And I actually chose the most expensive sport. So there's that. But for me, it was a no-brainer. The way that I felt from the second that I started acrobatics and the club that I got into and the people that I met, like there was no questions. Yeah.
Were you a bit of a natural when you got started in it, or was it a slow burn?
Well, I started with dance and gymnastics, and I loved them, but they didn't really fulfill me the way that acro did. So when I found that, which when I was 7, it was a funny story. We literally were just walking the dog around the block, and we lived, it was like my primary school, and I lived on the same street as my primary school. And then
where's this? In
Essendon, in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And then 2 streets back, was the my club that I joined, and we're walking the dog and we just found it. So the next night I went for a trial and I never looked back. What was the question you asked? I went on a tangent that
I got a little bit lost there. I think it was talking about how your parents wanted you to go one direction and you wanted to go acro.
Yeah.
And I guess it was what the to and the fro between making that happen and I guess how you got into it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think just I did netball from a very young age. It was like one of the first sports that I tried because of my mum. But then, yeah, once I stepped into acro, which was when I was 7, it just took off. And the way that I felt doing it was next to nothing. Like it was nothing like being on the netball court. It was just I felt like I could express myself. And I think because as a child I was so energetic, like very energetic, hence my mum put me in all these sports just to like tire me out so I'd go to sleep at night. But the way that I could express myself through acro and dance and be a performer was just something that I loved so much. And so when it came to the decision of like netball or acro, my mum knew how much acro lit me up. So she was like, I get it. It's really fine. She just had that little bit of hope that I was going to choose netball, but
she's
I didn't.
Like, it's fine. It's yeah. fine. Just cry.
Yeah. Just crying inside, but it's
okay. Don't worry about the tears.
Yeah.
What's the, you say that feeling, like, can you kind of describe that feeling?
I've never been asked this question. I don't know. I think just throughout my childhood, I was always kind of told off for being the crazy one or the too loud one. Or the naughty one. I'm always naughty. I'm always getting told off. I'm always put in the naughty corner. And so I felt as though I look back and even I just like created that video that you might have saw where I shared my story. I felt like I just could be myself when I was at acro. Like the people that I met, my coaches that I had, they just accepted me for who I was. They loved the energy that I brought to the gym. I made the most amazing lifelong friends. And I think just being able to also perform to music, which is so therapeutic, like being able to like let out emotions through movement. And it's something that I still do through gym. And like, I just feel like movement for me is so therapeutic, but stepping on stage and being able to throw people and lift people is also empowering. So it just combined it, everything that I loved. And then I got to put it on stage and perform for people and make them feel something as well.
The self-expression that you can put through it.
Yeah. Without words.
Without words, yeah. Just, yeah. Do you feel like you almost go to another place when you're in those moments?
Yeah. I look back at my videos from competing and I just, it's so, such a special feeling. Like I can just like take myself back, like even to when we went to the World Championships, and I just vividly remember standing on the side of the stage and just being like, this is everything that I've trained for, like everything. And then just getting on the stage where it's like pitch black, but the lights are on you. You can't see anyone in the crowd. You can't see the judges, and you're just there. Everyone's eyes on you, and you just get to perform to the best that you can.
What's the feeling when you're sitting in the wings there? Is it excitement, fear?
It's freaking terrifying. Yeah. yeah, a lot of nerves. I think just before the Worlds was like when I learned to try and control my nerves. And then because I was a base, and I had my partner who was like, I think she was like 4 years younger than me. So I also knew I always had to be that role model and show her, like, you know, being calm is how we're going to get our best performance, and always to be like, hold the nerves below your heart was something that I always learned, like keep them in your belly and don't let them come up. And just always like control yourself. And obviously in acro, like it's a very technical sport. So one thing goes wrong and it's not great. So it's like being able to just like hold those nerves and not let them come out, because it can
awesome. Can ruin everything.
Yeah.
I did a podcast with a guy called Sid. His name's Sid the Entertainer. He's a dance hero.
Yeah, he works for, he owns the Icon.
Yeah.
Icon, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I talked to him and he said same thing with his dancing. He's like, you just want two butterflies.
Yeah.
No more, no less.
Yeah.
He's like, you want to feel the nerves. I think.
Nerves are good.
But yeah.
It means when I see my kids that are nervous, like the kids that I teach, I'm like, it's because you care. You're excited. Yeah. You want to get out and do well, which is amazing, but it's learning how to control them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's what you do with them. Because I think if you have those nerves and they like affect you in your performance and like they're not good nerves, but if you channel them and actually go, okay, I'm nervous. I care. This is important. Mm-hmm. I need to put everything into it. That can give you that extra 5-10% that you need.
Yeah.
Did you find when you obviously were almost being that role model and coaching at the same time, because you said obviously there's a younger girl, you have to live up to a certain expectation.
Yeah.
Or you have to play a role. Did you find more fulfillment also in that role? Because you kind of become the mentor as well as the performer in the same moment?
Yeah, 1,000%. I think, so we had two coaches and they were brother and sister. And they were like my second parents, like they're just amazing. And they guided me through so much in my career. And so I always felt like I took on the third coach role, and the kids or our like teammates and stuff always knew they could come to me for anything. And I felt that was my purpose. Like I knew throughout my career that I'd always be a coach, and I had such a challenging career leading up to knowing my goal was always Worlds, but I had missed out on Worlds 3 times prior to getting there. So it was like we missed out by 0.01 of a point. And then the 2 times after that, my partners quit like before trials. So getting to that last one, I was like, so Worlds is every 2 years. So that's like a fair chunk of time. And it was right before the Worlds. I was like, maybe I'm just meant to be a coach. Like I feel so fulfilled doing that and being able to inspire and mentor others. And the kids knew they could come to me if they needed a spot in the gym or if they needed, they were having a bad day. Like they know what I'd always hype them up. And so I felt accomplished in that and I love doing that. But then I was like, I need to achieve my goal. And it was so close to not giving up, but just being like, okay, maybe coaching is my calling. And it was right before my boyfriend at the time, he injured his back. And so he ended up taking a step back because he was going to then train for Cirque du Soleil. So he knew he had to recover his back injury. And so the partner that he was with, she then had no partner and I was left with no partner. So they were like, let's put you girls together. And we pretty much did like 2 years of training in 9 months to get ready for the Worlds.
And this is after the failures though, like they're not being selected. How were those failures and setbacks by like the third one? Were you just, you're saying like this is.
Yeah, I just got to a point where I was like, maybe this isn't my calling. Like maybe I'm meant to step into that coaching role. And I almost felt like I'd accepted it because it still excited me. Like I could still be involved in the sport in a way that was just not me on stage, but being able to help others achieve their goal was always something that I wanted to do, but there was nothing like being on stage yourself.
Yeah.
So I felt close to being like, yeah, this is probably what's going to happen. And then once he retired and then I got my partner, Caitlin, it just all fell into place. And from that point on, like training for the Worlds was the hardest 9 months we've pushed forever. But from that point onwards, it was definitely a rocky journey, but it was the best thing ever.
Do you find it, because this is the, I always play with this idea with being a high-end athlete, and I always say this quote, so people are probably sick of it, but Tony Robbins has got this quote recently. If you want to take the island, you got to burn the boats.
Oh.
And you get that whole concept.
Yeah.
So your island was the World Championships.
Yeah.
Your boat was coaching.
Yeah.
So to be the best, you kind of got to burn your boat.
Wow, that's so interesting.
And then with you, it's that mindset though, it's like, you can almost use it in two ways, because it's like, if this doesn't work out, I can hop on my boat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can be really powerful because it can also calm you, because it's like, this isn't everything. And then like, there is more to life than just this one track mind of like, I gotta win this. But normally when you're in that one track mind, that's normally when you do really well, because you are like engulfed by your sport or this goal that you have in your mind. And I've always felt in my career when I was so fixated on something,
mm-hmm.
like nothing else matters.
Tunnel vision.
Relationships kind of go astray. You don't see as many people, but you just don't care.
Yeah.
It's just like, I want this thing.
And you'll do anything to get there.
Anything to get there.
Yeah.
It's like you go to sleep at thinking about it. You wake up thinking about it. And those people are hard to beat.
Mm.
And it's not even, and it's like enjoyment in that as well. It's not even just like, you're like, oh, I've got to do this tomorrow. You're like, oh, I'm going to do this tomorrow.
Yes.
It's a different feeling.
It's such a different energy. Yeah.
How did you feel? Because you said you obviously trained really hard in those building up to the world champs, but you also said you did have that back of your mind enjoyment. Like, if I coach, that's still good.
Mm.
How did you find the balance between those two?
Well, I think like leading up, so that 9 months into Worlds, I was still also coaching at the same time. Like, I was still always that mentor for anyone in the gym. Yeah. So I guess I was getting both. And then because I was training for Worlds, like, and we were the only group from Victoria to make Worlds in 14 years. So that in itself was just insane. And so that just felt like it was another, I guess, step up for me to be another good mentor, like to prove that, you know, after missing out on Worlds 3 times, you just have to keep going. And like, if it's meant to happen, it'll happen. But also, like, if you're going to put in the work, you'll get what you deserve as well. And I never gave up. Like, I broke my shoulder when I was 11 at state championships and went through, I broke my humerus and dislocated it on stage.
How did you do that?
I was getting, so this was when I was like a little top, like a flyer. And I did like a straight, like one flip off my partner, and I over-rotated, landed on my elbow, snapped my humerus, pushed it up, dislocated my shoulder. Didn't cry. Just going to put that out there. I didn't cry. Body went into shock. But I thought I could definitely keep going, and I definitely couldn't. And so I went straight to hospital, went through surgery and everything. And I was like terrified of surgeries, like absolutely terrified. And the one question I asked my mom and my coach was like, do I have to have surgery? And they're like, no, it's just like, you'll be fine. Like, just dislocate it. It'll be fine. 4 hours later, the doctors walked in. They're like, so we're going to operate. And then the waterworks came. Then I started crying. Because I knew that that meant time off from the sport, and I didn't want that. So I had my surgery, and the doctors told me 12 months off, and I came back in 9 months, full recovery, got back up, won national championships, kept going. And then exactly 4 years later, I hurt the same shoulder, and I just, like, I tore it, and it was just from like overtraining from the previous injury, which meant to another surgery. So I had, and it wasn't like a full reco, but along the lines of that.
How was it in the recovery stage? Like you said, you obviously just wanted to keep competing. How was it being sidelined and watching your kind of hard work slip away?
Yeah, I've got videos and photos of me like training in my sling and like doing everything that I could.
What did you pull out of those times though?
In terms of mindset?
Mindset, resilience, everything that comes with being tested like that.
I think it just proved my love for the sport to myself. Like, I broke my shoulder and I was like, I'll be back there next year. Like,
didn't scare
watch
you.
Me. No. Yeah. And I think I was 10, like that was in 2011. So I was 10 years old. And for me to realize that at that age, I was like, this sport is everything. Like, I obviously feel something for this sport and I ain't going to stop. And that was just like my drive. Like, I just never wanted to stop. And no matter what going my way, I never stopped. And so I had the second surgery, which is when I think I was 15. They told me 9 months, I was back in. No, they told me 6 months, I was back in 3 months. So I was just always there to prove them wrong. That's kind of my personality. I'll always prove you wrong. I came back from that surgery, won nationals again. It kind of led into like training up for the Worlds. And then post Worlds was when training got even more intense.
Got more hectic.
Yeah.
I can see your personality though, the whole like, I made a quote because it's a similar thing. It's just like, tell me I can and I'll try. Tell me I can't and I will.
Yeah, that's me.
And that's like probably you as a kid as well with your mum. Yeah. It's like, you can't do this or watch me.
Like, even to the point where mum, like, when I say I was a naughty kid, like I'd be sitting there next to my cousin and mum would be like, I'd hit her. And mum would be like, don't hit her. So I would look my mum dead in the eyes and I'd whack my my cousin.
You're like a demon.
Yeah, I was a little bit.
You're like, I want a family. Yeah. I want more of this.
This is your fault, mum. Sorry.
Savvy. You did this.
Yeah.
But then leading into the world champs, how did it feel? Because sometimes when you realize things start falling into place, you kind of realize, okay, this is when it should have happened. Like, the timing all comes together.
Definitely.
And you realize that in the moment when you're actually there. But it's all those times previous where you failed or, like, you didn't get selected or this. And you're like, why?
Mm-hmm.
And then it finally does happen. And you go, oh, it was supposed to happen like this. Did you feel that when you finally did get to the world champs?
Yeah, 1,000%. It all definitely felt right. So, as I said, we had two coaches and only one of them came to the Worlds with us. So it was our male coach, Steve. He came with us, and then obviously the whole Australian team. But I remember after my second shoulder surgery, we always used to say, like, across my journey, like, everything happens for a reason. So when I turned 18, I actually got that tattooed on my ribs because it was just like our thing. Like, we'd always say that. And I think that's something that's always kept me going. And it's such a cliche, like, kind of saying, but like, it truly got me through my journey. Like, every time something happened, I'd be like, oh, well, everything happens for a reason. And it just, like, looking back on my journey, I'm like, absolutely, it did. So getting to the Worlds and just like walking out onto the stage for the first time for like our first training was just like the most surreal feeling ever. Like, it was just like, it made me more grateful for the moment because I was like, I've put in absolutely every ounce of everything that I have to get to this point. And I also had, I find this like a really interesting story, but we had national squad training before the Worlds with like the whole team, with the whole Australian team. And I remember sitting down and we had to write our goals out for Worlds. And my partner and I had written down that we wanted to make podium. We wanted to make podium finish, which is huge. Like, Australia's never gotten a medal at the Worlds. So for us to be like, oh yeah, we're going to come in on our first World Championships ever, the first group from Victoria in 14 years, and we want to make podium. But we had a coach from Sydney. She sat down with us and we explained our goals and she was like, it's too big. It's not going to happen. And so obviously being our first World Championships, we were like, oh, okay, like, let's pull it back. Like, maybe she is right. Maybe we need to just like pull back a little bit and not aim so high because when we don't achieve it, like, yeah, it will be a bit sad.
Tell me I can't and I will.
Yeah, well, so we did pull back and we were like, okay, maybe it is too far-fetched. Let's pull back. Like, let's aim for finals. Because in acro, basically, to put it quickly, they have all different like age groups and you have like a men's pair and a women's pair trios. So I was in a women's pair in 13 to 19, which is an age group right below senior, and senior's the top level. So you go to Worlds, you compete three routines, you do your first two, and then if you make it through with that score to the finals, which is usually top eight. So at Worlds, we were against 14 or 15 across the world, and Worlds is finals is top eight. So we go into Worlds with the goal of making finals and not podium anymore. We get to Worlds, we felt so conditioned. We had trained so freaking hard, and especially that 6 weeks prior to Worlds was like the most hectic training I've ever done in my life, and I miss it so much. But we got there, felt so good. We walked out for our first routine and fell on our first skill, which was literally heartbreaking. But we got up, finished the routine like nothing ever happened, got a decent score for what happened, and then bawled my eyes out the whole night because I was like, we did not drop that skill for like 3 weeks leading up to the World Championships. Dropped it on the routine, and then the next day we were like, we're going to come in, fresh mindset, fresh day, we're going to nail this routine. It was like probably our best routine. We absolutely nailed it and we scraped in at eighth, so we made finals. Went out on our third day, and I think because we had changed that goal of to make finals, once we made finals, we were like, cool, like, we're done. Like, we get to go out and just have fun and enjoy this routine. And I look back and I'm like, if we had have kept that goal of being podium, we could have still made podium. Because when you go out for finals, it's a clean slate. They wipe all scores. So you're going from zero. So now you're against eight, scores back at zero. You have every chance of making the podium. But we went out being like, oh, it's just finals. Like, we've already done it. We've already achieved our goal. So we don't need to go extra hard, or we don't need to put in extra reps before we go on stage. It was just like, we're done. So I look back and I'm like, I hate that. I hate that so much that we listened to that coach who made us pull back on our goal.
I'm so fascinated with this because you can look at it two ways. It's like, yeah, you were so satisfied and happy with what you achieved, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
But there's always more.
Yeah.
And it's that thing where you wish you set the bar higher, which then if you achieve that. But I always find it so fascinating when I talk to athletes and I'm like, what's enough?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, just say you won gold. I'm sure there would be some kind of, oh, but we could have nailed this better. Or we could have done. And that's the thing. And it's, I think all great athletes, or most athletes in general, they don't switch off. They don't go, I'm so satisfied with my performance. It's like, to be that good of an athlete, that thing in your brain needs to keep going, there's more, there's 100%. More, there's more.
Yeah.
But I guess that's two-sided, where you're bummed that you didn't go for more, but you're also satisfied that you got to where you got.
Because
you could look at it just being there before finals. That could be seen as a win. I think it's...
Which definitely was. It was my goal for 6 years.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and it's like, I think it's set a goal enjoy that little goal and then set the next one and just constantly kind of be like leapfrogging where you think you should be.
Yeah.
But again, it's like not being disappointed with not reaching, like it's all good either way.
100%. And even like the learning of that, like I know now I'm like, if I have a big goal, like I will go for that big goal. Like I won't let anyone pull me back on that. Or when I'm teaching, I'm like, no, you aim for the stars. Like, because I just think it's going to drive you more. And I think, I don't know, the way that I look at it, I'm just like, I don't want people to pull back on their dreams because they think they can't achieve it. I'm
like, you protect them.
Yeah. You can achieve anything that you want to achieve.
And just telling people that they can. Like the whole, me and my friend were talking about this today, how they went sub 2 hours for a marathon.
Yeah.
And I think another guy just broke that as well. Wow. And it's that thing that once someone knows something's possible, they find that extra little 5% within themselves to go, well, I can do that. And I think when you see people start to win, they continue to win because they're like, oh, it's possible. And I think if you have the belief as a coach, and I'd always tell kids that I'd help, I'd be like, you can do that. Why can't you do that? And then they start believing it themselves. Like I've helped kids and I think the biggest lesson, the water bottle's there. I think the biggest lesson that I give to them, because they always get better and I'm like, I help them a little bit with their skill, help them a little bit with like their bike setup and whatnot. But the biggest thing I put into them is belief.
Yeah.
It's like you have someone that's done what you want to do and tells you that you can, they suddenly go, I can. And that will find those extra gears that they never thought they had. But it's like you're saying, it's like that feeling of, you've got to protect your own beliefs because people always try and rip them down or say, hey, you know, you can't do that.
Yeah.
How many people say you can't do something because they can't? It's just a reflection of themselves onto you. And you're like, just because you can't do it doesn't mean I can't. But it's even to that point, it's like who you share your dreams with or who you share your ambitions with is so important, because whether it's a good or bad response, it's still going to affect how you look at it.
Definitely. And that coach who told us that, she didn't make podium when she went to Worlds.
Yeah.
And so like no one from Australia has, so why would I, type of situation. So, and I always think like, okay, if she had never said that and we'd still aim for podium, what would that have looked like? Because our mindset going into finals, I tell you right now, would have been so different. We would have pushed that a little bit harder at training. We would have done a bit of extra that night before. But I also wouldn't change it because now I have that knowledge and that experience to now teach others.
It's like they almost, like the whole tell me I can't thing.
Yeah.
It's almost they want to like piss you off, but sometimes it doesn't piss people off. It just puts them down.
Yeah.
To go, oh yeah, you're right.
And I think as any young kid or any young athlete, all they want is belief from someone else. So like my coaches always knew I'd get to Worlds. And so having their belief in me was enough for me to be like, yeah, of course I'm going to make it. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's like if you're coaching younger athletes, well, like I am now, like I always want to be able to, well, I always show that I can believe in them because I know what it meant to me to see my coaches believe in me. And it's like when you're young and you're learning everything, you might not always believe in yourself because you don't really know what you're capable of. But as a coach, I can see someone's capabilities before they can. So as soon as I can show that I believe in them, they're like, oh, I can actually do that. And then they prove to themselves that they can do it.
It's a cool thing when you see the lights come on.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah, I can do the things that you've been telling me I can do.
Yeah.
And you start to feel it. And then it's just like they excel so much quicker.
Yeah.
That year you went, is that when you got second or was that when you got the finals and then you came back the next year in seniors and got second?
Yeah, the next year. So we came back from Worlds and in the lead up to Worlds, I started to deal with a bit of a back injury. So coming home from that, we rested a little bit and I'd also just like freshly turned 18 before Worlds. And obviously the lead up to Worlds, I didn't go out or anything. I actually left school in year 10 because I hate school and I knew nothing that I wanted to do was going to get from school. So I left in year 10 and basically just trained full time. So coming back from the Worlds, I took some time off to rest and recover, slow down training a little bit and also have a bit of a social life. And so I started to, I guess, go out and see what that was like. And I guess I learned quite early on that my body hates alcohol, like really hates it. And after a couple weekends of going out, I ended up in hospital and got really, really sick. I had rashes all over my body. They did all the tests and I ended up with tonsillitis, glandular fever and appendicitis. Yeah, so they say things come in three and I never do things half-assed. I'm always like, it's full on around here.
I'm going to run my body into the ground.
Yeah, so basically went in for surgery and got my appendix out. I also, TMI for the lads, but for the ladies out there, I also came off the pill that weekend, which I'd been on for 2 years. And from that point onwards, I my body like completely changed. I went through the recovery of getting my appendix out, which was like no training. I couldn't lift anything above 3 kilos, which absolutely killed me. I also was dealing with a breakup at that exact time with my ex. And that's probably when my mental health started to decline a lot. I guess just from obviously the breakup, and I think coming off the pill just really messed with my hormones, and then the surgery. I gained 12 kilos in about 6 weeks, which for me, I was a very lean, very, very lean athlete, always have been. And I felt like one day I woke up and I didn't know who I was. Like my body had changed, my mindset, my mental health was completely gone. I was in a very dark place within my head, and it lasted for a long time. I think dealing with that, which was something I'd never dealt with before, I'd never had to worry about my weight or my skin. My skin started to break out, which is when I started to get acne. I'd always been role modeled great mindsets from my mom, my coaches, everyone around me, and mental health wasn't really spoken about back then. Didn't really know how to deal with it, and it was kind of where everything went south in a way, because yeah, I didn't really know what was happening to me. I couldn't get answers. I was seeing doctor after doctor to try and get answers. And I think it was probably, that was like, when was my surgery? Mid-year-ish of 2018, or early to mid-year after the Worlds. And then I think it was a good 4 months of recovery and the weight gain, seeing different doctors. And then I slowly started to pick up back at training to figure out what our next goal was. And then so we realized we could qualify for the World Cup in 2019, which was in Vegas. So once we found that goal, we were like, we're going to get there. But then on the other hand, I was also dealing with all of this. And again, seeing so many doctors. And once I started to pick back up training, my back started to flare up again and just got worse and worse and worse. And I just remember so vividly, like, going through training and routines and skills. Like, I would leave training in tears every night. I have to lie down after a skill because I couldn't breathe because my back pain would be so bad. But I would push through because I'm like, I'm getting to the World Cup. Like, I'll do what I have to. And so it wasn't until the end of 2018, I finally found like a kind of doctor. She was like a specialist. It was like a spinal specialist, but also women's health. And so she did a million different scans. And the day that I walked in there and told her everything I was dealing with, she literally said to me, was like, okay, from what you've told me, it sounds like you're dealing with PCOS. It sounds like you've got quite a bad back injury. To me, it sounds like stress fractures. And from my back, my hip started to play up. She's like, I think there's something going on in your hip as well. So I went and got ultrasounds, MRIs, blood tests, everything. And I went back a week later, I walked in and she was like, you're diagnosed with PCOS. You have about 70 cysts on your ovaries. You've got stress fractures in your lower back, and then you've got a tear in your hip. And I just sat there and bawled my eyes out because I knew like this was not far out from the World Cup. And I was like, what does this mean? Like, I felt like she was ripping my dreams straight from me. Like everything that I had worked for, I was like, so what from here? And she was like, basically advised me to stop everything, go see a gynecologist, get surgery to remove my cysts, and go on a very long-term rehab program for my back. And I just was like, yeah, I don't think I can do that. And so I left that doctor's appointment and I called my coaches, explained everything, and they were like, we need a second opinion. So I was like, okay, good idea. Let's go get another opinion. And I went to a very well-known athlete, coach, specialist. Like, he was just a bit of everything, and he went around to all different athletes and clubs around Australia. And he said the exact same thing. He said, you're at risk of not walking again. You're at risk of never having kids. If you push this any further, you're risking your life essentially and all good health and mobility within your body. And of course, that was terrifying. I was 18 at the time. And when you have like another big dream to like go and compete at the World Cup as like the first ever group from Australia, and then to have this like underlying issues that I know need firsthand attention, I felt like my world stopped. Like, I just didn't know what to do. My mum was distraught for me. She felt like, not that she failed, but she was like, didn't really know how to guide me through this because she'd never gone through it. She didn't know what PCOS was. PCOS wasn't spoken about. Mental health wasn't spoken about. It was such a taboo topic back then. And I felt like I'd failed as an athlete, as a person, when I was diagnosed with depression and all the, like, PCOS and a stress factor. I was like, what do I do with my life? Because I had grown so much in the sport that acro became my identity. So I felt like as I started to lose that, I was like, I'm losing myself with that.
Yeah. Like, who is Tori? Who is Tori in those moments? Would you say that's probably the lowest point you've ever been to in those?
Yeah.
This is 2019 before the World Championships.
This was end of 2018.
End of 2018.
Yeah. So
what was the move that you did then? What did you do? Because it kind of ends in a happy story.
It does.
But what was the what did you do to get out of that as well? Because that's a dark time to be in when those things start stacking up.
Yeah.
And you kind of become trapped in your own mind. You don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. You kind of get stuck.
Yeah, I felt extremely stuck. As much as acro was like the risk, it was also my savior. Because I felt like as soon as I was in the gym, I was away from everything else. Like I was away from my head and how I felt. And I guess the turning point for me was suicidal thoughts, because I was losing everything. I lost my partner, broke up with him, and then, yeah, like I felt like I lost myself. So getting to the point of like thinking I didn't want to be here or trying to hurt myself was like the point of being like, no, this isn't you. This is not what you're here for. You're better than this. You're bigger than this. Like, we've got to work through it. And so that point onwards, I think I spoke up to my ex. So I felt like I could only really talk to him at the time. And then he ended up telling my mom. And so then she was kind of aware of where I was at. And I kind of briefly told my coaches. I never really told anyone how serious it was until after, because I never wanted to admit that again, because mental health was so like taboo back then.
Ashamed of it, hey?
Yeah, it was such a shameful thing, which now is like, I think it's improved so much since then, which is amazing. But yeah, it was definitely a shameful thing. So basically from there, both my parents were like, you need to stop. Like, health comes first, rehab, we'll get you back, and then you can train again for the Worlds or whatever we choose to do. But this comes first. And if you need to push the World Cup back, you do that. So I kind of sat with it. And I ended up making the decision to go ahead and compete, which to some people sounds absolutely wild, but there was something in me that knew I could get through. I felt like I'd gotten through the last 6 months of training with the back injury. And in my head, there was something there that was like, no, you can get through it. And so I did. And my coaches like kind of knew that I had to taper back a little bit. And so we were pushing all these amazing skills prior to getting sick, because obviously now we'd changed to senior, which is the top level. So it means you up your skills, you go next level. And we decided to like taper back a little bit and realize we could go to the World Cup with not the skills that we wanted to, which was like a bit of a sad moment, because I was like, no, we trained all these big skills, but safety reasons, it made sense. So we tapered back a little bit and we still went with incredible skills. And I'm so proud of what we put on the stage. But the 3 month lead up was quite intense. As much as we tapered back, it was still obviously, I mean, you're training for the World Cup. It's not a walk in the park. But because I had gained so much weight, I was getting judged. Obviously, as an acrobat and a performer, you get judged on how you look and your appearance. And my partner that I was with, she was a very like long, skinny flyer. And I had put on 12 kilos. And obviously, throughout Australia and training for 10 plus years, all the judges and everyone knew me to be like this fit, lean athlete. So then to walk out on stage and not be that, it was so hard. And then to have judges be like, talk to my coaches and be like, what's going on? Like, she looks overweight. You need to. So then to hear that from like other people, when I knew in myself, and I was trying everything, I was trying every sort of diet you could imagine. Like, I was training, it was a very toxic time, but before the World Cup, I was working at F45 and I was working like from the 5 a.m. shift to like the 8 a.m. and then I would coach the 9 and then go back home, eat, sleep, go train the 12 a.m., do cardio, smash myself, go home, eat, sleep, go back to the gym and train weights from 2 to 3, eat, relax, and then train from 4 to 8 p.m. Like, that was like my cycle, because I, back then it was like the feeling of eat less, train more. That's how you lose weight. And that's all I knew. And that's all my mom knew too. Like, the back in her generation, that's how you lost weight. So I guess I was just doing that and I was just hammering myself. And the more I trained, the more weight I put on. Because now I look at it, I'm like, well, like, the more stress I put on my body, the more it was trying to hold on to keep itself alive, to keep going. So it made sense that I was gaining more weight. Now it does. Back then it didn't. So it was just more terrifying. But in the lead up, I think it was a week out from the World Cup, I had a seizure at training, And I remember so vividly, I was hanging from the bars to like stretch out my back because like just to hang was nice. And so basically I was just like hanging there and all of a sudden dropped and my whole body was like convulsing, shaking. We actually have it on cameras, but luckily one of our students was a nurse. So she came over and one of our students' mum was there. She was a nurse. They checked all my vitals and everything and I was fine. Went to the doctor that night and they were just like, you're under eating. You're not hydrated. You're training way too much. Like, gave me the whole rundown. So basically I was on like food watch. So like everyone was just making sure that I was eating enough. And then when we got to the World Cup in Vegas, in America, like food portions are so big. There's not much healthy foods, but luckily we had a restaurant like under our hotel that was like rice, chicken and broccoli. And that's pretty much all I ate. Within the first like 3 days, I lost 2 kilos of being over there. And then it was just like this whole battle of having like body dysmorphia and like, yeah, I guess I had an eating disorder. I've never really kind of looked at it like that, but I definitely would say that I did to some extent. But it was also that I could just get out on stage and be accepted or look good on stage and put out my best performance. But it was a very toxic time. But again, it was me doing anything I could to get on that stage at the World Cup, which is insane.
It's crazy. Like you say, looking back, especially when those doctors said like you could affect if you walk properly again, you could affect a family. Mm-hmm. And that was obviously, I don't know back then, but obviously now that's such a big goal of yours. And I'd say back then that would have been massive as well.
Yeah.
And having someone come and say that to you and then that tunnel vision way of thinking is, it's insane.
And I think that's just like a true, like, that's a true athlete in my eyes. Like if you're putting like your life goal aside because of that tunnel vision, like all I wanted was to get on that stage. To get on stage and perform at the World Cup, because since I was 7, that was my goal. Since I knew the World Cup was a thing, it was my goal. So to put everything aside, but again, like, I don't know whether it was intuition or, you know, just my inner dialogue, just being like, no, you got this, like you can get through the next 3 months. And so I did, we got to the World Cup. It was a smaller World Cup. So we were against 4 or 5 and it was like USA, Israel, there's a few others in there. And we put our best on stage for what our lead up was. And we came out with a silver medal, which was, standing on that podium was definitely a highlight. And I think I think it made it more special for what I'd been through. And I think like I walked off the podium, my coach and I just bawled our eyes out. Like just because we knew what we'd been through that whole last 12 months was just such a whirlwind. So then to come out with a silver medal against some of the world's best was just wild.
Did you think back to that doctor's office when you were standing on the podium?
Yeah, I was thinking, so I did it, everyone, and I'm still walking. Toxic,
just,
I know.
Yeah, but I was like, going to say, proved you wrong.
Yeah, and I think that's just something that I've always had in me, but I just trust myself. Like, I know if I can get through something, I will. And I got through enough. I got through to get where I wanted to go. And then the second I walked off that stage, like in our last routine, my body was like, I'm done. And I got really, really sick after that. I got bronchitis and my body went really downhill. But it kind of makes sense. I think my body held on to absolutely everything it could to get past. And then once that was up, my body said.
Once it knew it had done the job.
Yeah.
And then from going on from that, because was that the last time you competed properly?
Yeah.
Oh, and this I felt that.
It makes me emotional thinking about it, because I always, I don't know why, but as an athlete, I always wanted to know the last time I was walking on the stage and know that like this would be my last performance. So I hated that I didn't know that, because
I can relate to that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So the time I came off the stage, and basically my plan in my head was to go home, have a rest, come back for 2020 Worlds, come back, go for senior, bring back all the big skills we'd been training. I'd be recovered. I'd be fit again. And we'd go for that freaking podium finish. But it didn't quite happen that way. So we came home and I took about a 3 month break to like completely rest my back. Started to see so many doctors, and I guess like the weight was still there, the acne was still there, mental health still wasn't great. It was just like an up and down, very roller coaster ride. And so it came to like July 2019, and I went away for the weekend, and I just, something clicked in me and was like, I can't, I've got nothing left to give. I felt empty. And I was like, as much as I had achieved all this and I was so happy with what I did, I was like, if I don't take the actual time to rest, I will never get back on the stage ever. And so I went back to the club and I spoke to my coaches, and unfortunately it was a very sad and disappointing end to my time at the gym. It was me being like, what was I, 18 at the time, not really knowing how to go about it, but I was just like, all I know is I need a rest. I need to give my body time to recover if I ever want to have kids again, first off. But if I ever want to be back to perfect health and in a position where I can coach again, or, you know, be happy and healthy again. And there was just so many variables that went into it. Obviously, I'd been a massive part of the club. I was so close with my coaches, and it just didn't end on a nice note, which was really unfortunate. But the next 6 months after leaving was probably the worst. It was like a very blur moment. It was probably, so from like July 2019 to the end of 2019, I don't really know what happened. I didn't work. I didn't train. I was just floating around, basically. I got caught up in like going out and like drinking. I think it was like an escape for a while. And just like hanging out with people who just like didn't really have passion for life or like a goal in mind. And it was just me kind of plodding around when I was just like, I actually don't know what I'm doing. I don't know. I'm not really healing. I'm not putting in any work to myself. I'm just trying to escape what was happening.
You're kind of lost in those moments.
So that was a very blurry 6 months until I got an opportunity to go work in Hobart, which is so random. But I got an opportunity to go start up an acrobatics kind of program in a gymnastics club in Hobart. And I was like, you know what? I need to get out of Melbourne. I need to do something different. So I moved in January of 2020 when I actually got this tattoo with wings that says 2020, because I decided that 2020 was going to be my rebirth year and I was going to rediscover myself, because like I mentioned earlier, Tori without acro, who is she? I had no idea who that was. Acro was me. That's who I was. I was acro. Acro was me. It was my identity. Every person in my life that knew me knew I did acro, and that's what it was. So it was time to kind of step away from that and discover out who I was as a person, what I loved, who I was like deep down. So I moved to Hobart all by myself. I was 19 and I lived there for, it was meant to be a full term. They wanted me for the year. I committed to the term. In that term, I actually got accepted into the circus, like a circus company in Australia. And from January, February, March, April, May-ish, I was meant to go and travel the world with the circus. And I was like, sick, this is going to be amazing. Get paid.
Plot twist.
Yeah, plot twist. I was like, cool, I get paid to do what I want to do. This is going to be amazing. And then lo and behold, the wandering world stopper came in. And so I got made redundant from my work. Everything shut down. Got sent home back to Melbourne. And again, it was probably another 6 months of blur. Like I had to live with my auntie because my mum's partner at the time wouldn't allow me back home. That was a very rocky relationship in itself. So I was dealing with really intense family issues. I was living with my auntie, who, very grateful for them, they made me feel, she's like not a blood auntie, but she's like an auntie, you know what I mean? And they made me feel like I was loved and cared for. But it was still a time of navigating why I was still hanging on to all this weight, mental health, and obviously like the world had shut down. Like, what else are you meant to do? So again, it was probably another 6 months blur until I actually found Jackson on TikTok. And then another plot twist.
How did that happen?
So I was just scrolling on TikTok and he popped up on my page and I was like, that's nice. It's really nice to look at.
Some of that.
I'll have some of that. So I just went over to his Instagram, did the whole like, liked a couple of photos. He liked a couple back.
We know where this is going.
We know where it's going. And I followed him and then he followed me back. And then I was like, that's my job done. If he wants me, he can come and get me. And he's from Adelaide and he lived in Adelaide at the time. And obviously it's kind of like mid-COVID at this point, but he ended up replying to a story and then we just spoke for like every day from that point onwards. Like it was probably like a month into talking. We had our first FaceTime call and then we had like a month of calling, and then it was like the week before, no, Yeah, it was a week before Melbourne was going into like really harsh lockdown, and we joked around saying like, if borders shut, like I'll just come to Adelaide, like, and see what happens. And the next week we were sitting in the lounge room and they were announcing that they were closing borders in the next 24 hours. And my parents had driven up to the Gold Coast. So I was living like with my stepsister at the time, not working, not really doing anything else. I was like, what do I have to lose? So I packed up my mum's car, drove to Adelaide the next night with everything in my mum's car. And then did 2 weeks of quarantine and never looked back.
So you did 2 weeks of quarantine by yourself or with Jackson?
Well, I did it with my best friend at the time who moved with me from Melbourne. We had a falling out a couple of years ago, but she moved with me at the time.
Where did you do the quarantine?
Just in an Airbnb.
Airbnb, okay.
Yeah. It wasn't like strict.
It wasn't as strict, yeah.
Or in Adelaide, it didn't really get to that point. So we just did it in Airbnb, like the police would come and check on you a few times. But yeah, we did our quarantine, and then pretty much once quarantine was up, we were like, let's do life. Like, let's see where this takes us. And Jackson and I just went 0 to 100 real quick. Like, we moved in together within 2 months. Like, it just worked really, really well. I started a business in December 2020 of coaching acro, coaching dancers, strength and conditioning, and I guess like teaching everything that I'd learnt to like up and coming generations. And meeting Jackson was probably, I say this all the time and it gives him the biggest head, but I would say he honestly saved my life. He taught me so much of what I didn't know about health and fitness. He is the reason that I'm this fit and healthy today. Like, I would not be the way I am without him. He was a personal trainer and he basically just taught me the basics really, really well. And once I moved, we kind of went through everything that I'd been through, and he was like, you need to start increasing what you're eating. We need to taper back on training, just increase your steps, train 3 or 4 times a week, start really like focusing on whole foods. Cause I was like, it's horrible. I was literally eating about 900 calories a day because I was afraid of food and putting on weight, like so, so bad. So I slowly increased my calories with him. He was training me in the gym, and within a year I'd lost like 14 kilos and cleared my skin, and was like the healthiest, happiest version I've ever been. Yeah.
How was the fear though of taking that plunge from getting in the car, going to see the boy from TikTok?
Literally terrifying.
What's going to happen?
I didn't tell my dad. I told my mom. My mom was all for it. She was like, get in the
car. It looks bad from the outside.
It does. So
there's a boy on the internet. He's reached out. I'm going to go find him.
I'm going to drive across bloody Australia to go and speak to him. But I told my dad once I was there, and yeah, he was so fine with it. But my mom was like, take my car. Like, go. Pack everything up. What have you got to lose? Go for it. And she's like, she's where I get all my spontaneity from. Like, she is like this free-spirited woman that I've like inherited all that from. But yeah, it was definitely like scary, but I think because we had spoken for like a month and then we'd FaceTimed and I think it was really beautiful because there was no physical aspect to it. It was all genuinely getting to know each other from the ground up. It was calls every night, like hours of phone calls, and it was getting to know each other's personality. Like, and he was learning everything that I was going through, and then to stick by me through that, like, insane.
Yeah, the physical attraction, obviously you can see someone, you're attracted to them, but I think once you just involve like touch and sex and all that straight away, that kind of clouds the version of who you think that person is. It's like,
totally,
are you into me or are you just kind of sex drunk in a way?
Yeah, totally.
And it's like, if you actually have that, like I always talk about dating apps, there should be a voice before you see the person. You should have to like swipe left or right on a voice note. And you literally have a voice note about like, I think this is how I'd come across as a person, or say something about yourself.
Yeah.
And then the person likes that. And then the next thing is maybe a photo, or like, it just like have it as layers, because you see a person and you fall in love with the attraction of what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably suck. I don't know. They could or they couldn't, but
yeah,
it cloudies the waters a little bit.
Yeah. And attraction is a huge part. Like, obviously you need to be attracted to your partner, but to get to know them on a core level is like amazing. Mm. And basically from the first night we met, we were like, cool, this is amazing.
This is us.
This is even better.
We've locked it
in. Yeah, we've locked it in. And so, yeah, we moved in together within like 2 months. And we've like lived together ever since, all through Adelaide. And then I took the leap and moved up here to the Gold Coast. In 2022, I got offered a couple of jobs up here, and it just aligned with everything that we wanted for our future. we didn't think it would come across like so quickly, but it did. So we did long distance for 9 months. So
what
we saw
that. He's in Adelaide still. You are.
He was in Adelaide, and I was in Gold Coast. It was challenging, of course. I think more for him at the start because everything for him was the same. And I always say this to anyone who asks like for advice on long distance. When the person who's moving away, everything for them is going to be new. It's exciting. Yeah. It's new jobs. It's new friendships. They're busy all the time. But for the person who's staying at home, everything's the same. They're just losing that person.
Yeah.
So I think it was harder for him at the start. And I was so busy and occupied and excited and learning all new things and people and everything.
You've also been training for this for your entire life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the whole, like when you got taken away from your dad in a way.
Yeah. Like well, I was like, this is normal for me.
Yeah. 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 Like exactly. Yeah. But like you can probably deal with it in a different way.
Yeah. And it wasn't until the end of long distance, probably the last like 3 months, I was like, I am so over this. Like, yeah. And the worst thing for us was we didn't have a time frame because he was still in Adelaide playing footy. I was settled in Queensland waiting for him to join me eventually. And so it came to the end of that footy season and it was like, okay, you going to play in Adelaide again or are you going to come to the Gold Coast? And it was fully his decision. And again, another point where I was like, I will support you whatever you do. This is your career. I want you to make it. I want you to achieve your goals. So whatever you need. And if that's another year of long distance, so be it. Like we'll make it through. And he didn't involve me in the decision at all. And it was so hard. Because he was very open about it. He was like, I'm not talking to you. I'm not talking to my parents. I'm not talking to anyone. He spoke to like a psychologist about it to really figure out what he wanted to do in his heart, which I think is amazing. And it was just really exciting that it came to Queensland.
Had you been to the Gold Coast before?
Has he?
Like before he made the
decision? Yeah, he'd come up for a few holidays. Like he surprised me a couple of times. And then before I moved, we'd come up on a holiday a few times. And he'd been to, his family went to Noosa every single year for years on end. So he's always loved the Gold Coast or the coast. But yeah, one day I came home from work and he'd like set up the camera and he was like, so someone came and visited the house today. And I was like, who? And he was like, the Southport Football Club manager. And I was like, and he was like, I've signed a contract. And I was like, so you're moving to the Gold Coast. I was in so much shock because he wouldn't tell me what way he was leading. He wouldn't tell me anything. I couldn't get anything out of him. So I was fully ready for him to be like, I'm going back to Adelaide. And then he didn't.
How was that feeling?
It was amazing. It was really exciting. I was happy for him that he'd made the decision on his own and I wasn't a part of that, or his parents weren't a part of it, or his brothers, like whatever.
You're a part of it. You're a part of it.
But I fully was ready to just be like, you do what you got to do. Yeah, like I want you to get drafted again and I want you to achieve your goal. So I was happy for him to do what he needed to do, but I was very happy that he decided to do it on the Gold Coast and it just started like a whole new chapter for us.
And how do you reckon your life, do you reckon you kind of picked up the momentum of your health, your wellness, all that changing when you went to Adelaide and met him and then moving up here? Do you feel like that kind of poured like gasoline on it and it's gone kind of crazy now?
Yeah, 100%. I think for the like a year and a half in Adelaide with him, which was like my big like transformation period, and then coming to the Gold Coast where it's like it's health, it's fitness, like you're up early, you're loving life, everyone here is just fucking happy. And it's hard not to feel that energy. I think when you come up here and it's the same as how he felt, like he would come up and visit me. He's like, it's just so good up here. The weather, like we both love hot weather. We both love the beach. Like the people you're around up here is like, it's not like Melbourne, let me tell you. But it just like amplified everything that I was doing. And then all these opportunities like came through and I had been like building my social media. So when I actually retired from Acro, I started YouTube. And the reason behind that was mental health because I was like, this is so taboo. People need to talk about it. And so that was the biggest like driver for my social media where it started. And so from that point onwards in 2019, I started to build socials and start to go down that route when I found out it could become a job. And so it started to grow. And I think I hit like 10K in 2021 maybe. And then upon my move to the Gold Coast, my Instagram got hacked and I didn't get it back. And so it was like a blessing for sure. I'd moved to the Gold Coast. My Instagram got hacked and I had to start fresh as I'd moved to a new state. I was like, it's a sign. This is meant to be a fresh slate. And I hated it because I'm such a memory hoarder and my Instagram had everything, like all my comps, all my training, like my transformation. You could see like where I'd come from to where I was. And so my Instagram now, like I share that journey, but you don't see like the bottom of it. But I've worked hard to build that back up. I've grown from zero to nearly 35K in 2 years. So it's like I've put all my energy into that, and I found such a passion in social media and sharing my story and seeing how much it's helped and inspired others has like lit a fire in me. And then also to coach athletes and acrobats as well is amazing.
I think that's such a valuable tool to show people, because to you, just someone that came into your life now, she's healthy, she's fit, she's got a boyfriend, like her life's amazing, and they don't see the road that you took to get to this destination.
Yeah.
And I see you do it as well. And you know, Olivia May, I see she does it a lot as well. And it just gives hope to a lot of people, because a lot of people see this end product, but they don't see all the pain. They don't see the struggle. Mm-hmm. They don't see any of that. So I think if you can shine a light on that
100%.
And go, okay, you're not in the best place. I wasn't in the best place. Look where I am now.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that shows them, okay, I can be more, I can do more. So I think that's such a powerful message to show people. And it's almost, sometimes I feel this in myself, like I don't want to almost share the hard times, because it almost brings them back in a way.
Mm.
But you know, by doing that and kind of opening that wound in a way and showing like, oh, I was there and now look where I am, that like the benefit of that, it's like you can't even put into words how that can help people.
Yeah, I feel like the experience I have, no money or school, like no money can buy it, no school can teach it. And I think that in itself is so powerful, because the way that I can connect with the students that I teach is beyond amazing. Like I think because, you know, I am young and they can connect with me, and not even just like on a coach level, but like on a friend level, they know they can come to me. I'll always be there for them because I had that, and I always want to be that role model or be that inspiration for them, and knowing that they don't have to do it alone. And if they are going through anything, like they know I've been through it almost.
You become more useful.
Yeah.
You've seen it, you felt it.
Yeah.
And as shit as it was seeing and feeling it, if you can become better for that.
Yeah.
My friend Chris that you met before, he's talking about the similarities between heroes and villains.
Mm-hmm.
They both have the same backstory. They come from pain.
Yeah.
It's like the villain, the world hurt me, I'm going to hurt the world.
Yeah.
Hero, the world hurt me, I'm going to help the world.
100%. I love that. Mm. That's cool.
So it both comes through. I actually want to read something that I saw on your Instagram and just kind of get your thoughts on it.
Okay. I have no idea what this is going to be.
Are you worried?
Kind of. I put a lot of things on. I don't really hide much on my Instagram, that's for sure.
So you wrote this a little while ago. And you said, I got so sick of myself, my excuses, the way I felt, the mentality I had. It pushed me so far and I had nothing left but to change. From overweight, depressed, scared of food, weight's killing me, myself and cardio, starving myself and having to look a certain way for society, to chasing the feeling of being strong, healthy, happy, free of all the stress, anxiety I was causing myself, to look a certain way in society, moving for pleasure, not punishment, eating intuitively, passion for food, making good choices, for my mind, my body and my soul. Weakness is the doorway to personal growth. No one decides to go and invest in themselves unless they feel uncomfortable. You can change at any point. You can turn your life around at any point. You can recreate your life at any point. Don't sit on that any longer.
Wow, I wrote that.
But I really like the part there where it says weakness is a door to personal growth.
Yeah. I just feel like it says at the end, like you don't feel called to change unless you're uncomfortable. And I think that's exactly where I got to. I knew growing up, I've always seen how much you can achieve. Like my mom's done so much. My family's done so much. The role models in my life had done so much. And I was like always that person who, like I was the girl at comps with my headphones in listening to like deep motivational like speakers and stuff. Like that was my pre-comp like hype up. And I guess I just felt like I always had it in me to be great. And I always said as a little girl that I wanted to be someone. I wanted to be famous. I wanted to be someone who could make an impact. And I guess going through my journey, it felt like when I hit that rock bottom, I was like, this is not what I was here to do. And I just felt like inside I was always here to do something good, and I had to find that in me. And I think my journey was always going to happen that way. I was always going to have to go through the trenches to now share that and inspire other people. And I think that was always going to be my path. It just makes sense.
You had to go through it to actually be able to be useful enough to use it.
Yeah. And I think like weakness is the roots of personal growth, because when you can sit, when you can like come to the realization of your weaknesses, you're like, okay, how can I improve on that? How can I change my weaknesses to my strengths? How can I push my strengths even more? And I guess as well, like my mum was such a good role model in always, and again, like I was the reason she went into her spiritual journey, and now she's the reason I've gone into my spiritual journey, because I saw the growth that she did post her divorce with my dad, and what she put into herself, and she went to counseling, and she was reading like wellness books and listening to podcasts and drinking green friggin' celery juices and like doing all this to be her best for herself and me, and to give me a really good life and a really good career, and obviously my siblings and stuff as well. But I think she was such a good role model in that. And as much as at the beginning I was like, oh, this is so woo-woo, like meditation, I'm like, this is like my heart and soul now. Like if I can't step into that and push my personal growth, then I'm not going to be able to help others. And like, I'm just, there's no end to personal growth. There's no end goal. It's just like, it's a forever growing journey, which I love.
And you're also going to be in the right headspace to actually take that wisdom or that knowledge in.
It's definitely hard to admit your weaknesses or just areas in life where you know you're not good at. Like having that awareness is hard, and then admitting it or writing it down and journaling about it, or then speaking to a psychologist about it or kinesiologist or whatever route you go down, like opening up for the first time was very daunting. Mm. And I remember doing it on my first ever YouTube video. It's literally called Tori's Story. And it was me talking basically what this is, but a very younger version of me with a lot less awareness.
You own it.
Yeah. And I remember pressing like stop record on that video and just felt like the world had lifted off my shoulders.
Yeah.
Like I so remember sitting there in my bedroom because I was like, I have nothing to hide.
Yeah.
And I've never hidden since.
It's like the whole, have you watched 8 Mile, like the Eminem movie?
No, I need to watch that.
Watch it. It's really good.
Yeah.
But the whole thing in the last rap battle.
Yes. I think you were telling me about it.
Yeah. All the things that he knew the person was going to say about him, he just said about himself.
Yes.
I'm like, what are you going to do now? Don't hide your insecurities. Don't hide your issues. Don't hide all that
stuff. Use them as your power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you going to do? Okay, sweet. I am this way. I do that. What are you going to say now?
Because you'll never ever get offended by anyone else when you know what they're going to say.
Yeah.
Or when you've already accepted it and when you've got the awareness of it, you're like, yeah, cool, I'm working on it.
Yeah, I failed that.
What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, it sucked. I'm trying to fix it. We're trying to do better.
So powerful.
And you say, like, it's like a weight is lifted. And that shame, because even like you're saying about with like the mental health side of things, and I felt a lot of that as a kid growing up, like the shame of going through things like that and having issues, and you bottle it up and you hide it.
Because it's what society was told you to do. You don't speak about your feelings.
No.
Especially men don't speak about their feelings. They're meant to bottle it up.
Yeah.
And especially in elite sports, I feel like it's definitely improved now, but back then, and even wasn't that many years ago, but when I was going through anxiety and depression, like if you were an athlete with anxiety and depression, you weren't an athlete. And it just was such, like you had to hide it,
the stigma. Hey, it's like, yes, you've got to be mentally strong.
Yeah.
Being depressed isn't mentally strong in the view, like in the eyes of people that look at athletes.
Correct.
But then most of the time, and I talked about this, what do you think about this? Because I talked about it the other day and it kind of stirred some stuff, but I look at great athletes in some way being kind of broken people.
Mm.
And they're almost trying to feel, it comes back to what's enough. And a lot of times it's coming out of a place of like, I didn't feel like I was good enough as a kid. And then I found sport and I suddenly had something that I could put all my energy into. So I became obsessed with it because I was like, I was kind of broken.
Mm.
I was depressed. I didn't have many friends. I didn't have any goals. And then lo and behold, you find something that can, suddenly I'm getting friends. Suddenly, yeah. So I 100% know at that time when I got into my sport, I was a broken person. And because of that, it made me the athlete that I was.
Mm.
And then all these people are like, oh, I want to be a great athlete. I'm like, man, like,
yeah.
Sometimes it takes stuff that you don't really want to give.
Yeah, well, now that you say that, it's like, well, my parents were divorced when I was 3. I always missed, there was always a hole in my heart because I was like, I don't have what I've always wanted or what I thought was normal.
Filling a void.
So then Acro filled that and I gave absolutely everything to it. So then when it got ripped from me, my world then fell apart. So now since retirement, I've been able to figure out who I am and be happy with Acro. I can still love the sport and I can still want to do a lot for it, but I know if I don't have it, I'm okay. Whereas back then I was like, I'm not okay.
I normally ask this question at the end about how you want to be remembered, but I'll ask you, who is Tori?
Tori is a very spontaneous, free-spirited woman who won't stop until she gets what she wants. And I think my story says that. But when there's something that I want, I won't let anything get in my way. Or it will get in my way and I'll step right over it. It tends to get in my way, actually, and then I'll step over it. But did you say how I want to be remembered?
Yeah, like who you are and how you want to be remembered.
Yeah. I think just like the girl that went after it. She never took no for an answer and she trusted herself. I think I've proved that I've trusted myself. And even now, like going through my self-development journey, there's, I feel like, I love this saying where it's like new level, same devil. So it's like, you know, I'm still figuring out how to trust myself at a new level now. Whereas back then I clearly trusted myself because I had 3 doctors tell me I'll never walk again. And then I still went and competed. So I've learnt all through different levels to trust myself and know that what I have is enough and what I will do will happen in its own time. And everything happens for a reason.
Yeah. Did you say then new devil? No, what is it? New level.
New level, same devil.
Yeah, I heard different levels. What is it?
New level, new devil.
Or same level, different devil. I've heard so many different alterations of that, but it's like the same thing. Same thing, yeah, of how there's always something new to that you got to face.
100%.
Something going to change. I'm going to ask you, what are you scared of?
You know what I'm scared of. This is actually ironic because you just posted about it, but I'm scared of death.
Really?
And I'm scared of not living to my potential.
Hmm. What scares you about death, though?
Because I love life and I never want to leave.
But you don't know if you're actually leaving.
No, really. I know. And you're I wish we had that answer.
You're leaving your form of what you think it is.
Yeah. I just never want to be without my people and what I do. Who knows? Maybe I will have it when I go to heaven.
Yeah. Maybe you're still here in some way.
Yeah.
True. That's funny. I heard they talked about the death thing the other day.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to do more breath work.
Yeah, I think I do.
More breath work. You can go so deep into that.
Because I will literally get clammy and sweaty and hot and want to vomit when we talk about death.
Really?
Because I just feel, I think it scares me because I'm like, well, I haven't done everything yet. Mm. I need to do more. Which is, I think, the athlete coming back.
Yeah. But then the whole thing is you're always going to want to do more.
Yeah, you're right.
Until you probably get to that point where you're 80 or 90, there's always going to be something that you probably want to do.
Yeah.
And I think that comes back to when you were talking about your coach that gave you an expectation about, like, don't get the podium. And you're like, it's being happy with how far you've come.
Yeah.
And not, and obviously still striving to be better and do more, but I don't think it shouldn't put fear in you that there's more out there to do.
Yeah.
It should excite you. But if you don't, again, reach it, everything's okay.
It's still fine.
It's still fine. Yeah. But it is a hard mindset. It's that whole striving to be better, striving to see more, striving to do all these things and also being content with it in the moment.
Mm.
And that's something that as an athlete, I think so many of us struggle with.
Yeah, 100%. It's something I'm still working through and I speak to it a lot on my stories at the moment, even just in terms of training. Like I've now learned that slowing down, my body appreciates so much. I'm in probably the best physical position I've been in a very long time and I'm doing less than I ever have. Because my body appreciates low intensity training, long walks, eating intuitively, but the most whole foods possible. Just slowing down. But there's this little head in my, there's this little like voice in my head that's like, no, you need to train 3 times a day. And if you're not walking out the gym, like holding your legs, like you didn't train hard enough. Like I'm still having that voice and I speak to it a lot. And there's a lot of people who relate to it because they're feeling the same. And I'm like, I don't need to train as an athlete anymore. And that's okay. And I also live with 2 athletes, Lily training for bodybuilding, which is just a whole nother thing. And then Jackson training to still achieve his goal. So I'm also around it as well, which I love, but I'm also like, oh, I'm not doing enough. Like I'm not training. It sucks me in. And I loved being an athlete. I wish I could still could, but it's just not my passion anymore.
Yeah.
But it's just that little voice that I'm still working through.
What's some advice you'd give someone going off your training routine and how you do it and with like with training and recovery, what's some advice you'd give to someone?
Like right now?
Right now, training? Yeah.
1000% listening to your body, but understanding your body, because people can be like, oh, I'm listening to my body, but they're doing it and how they want to do it, if that makes sense. So I've tried it all. I've tried all the diets. I've tried all the training styles. I've CrossFit, cardio, no cardio, just weights, like Pilates, yoga. I've literally done it all. And you have to try everything to figure out what your body appreciates. And so for me, that has literally been training less, eating when I'm hungry, listening to my hunger cues, and just learning more about my body. And even Lily's like, you've literally stopped training and I'm doing like 3 sessions a bloody day and eating like next to nothing to get on stage and you're looking amazing. And it's just how my body responds. And I think after putting my body through so much stress, it's like, okay, I appreciate you slowing down and I'm going to actually show you that I appreciate you. And I just feel like the best I've ever felt. I feel like I can go and lift, do 100 kilo squat if I want to, but then I can also go and do a Pilates class and feel great. So I think it's just understanding your body.
Just not a 10K run.
Yeah, not a 10K run.
But it is funny that, again, being around athletes and being an athlete and seeing people do a certain amount and then thinking, I have to do the same.
Yeah.
And then you set this standard in your mind of where you can't come down from that. But then realistically, you're kind of hindering it more so than helping it in the long run. And you've kind of felt this, found this sweet spot. And it's being okay with that and being in your lane.
Yeah, like, staying in your lane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I was going to ask you if you could go back and give some advice to younger Tori, what would you say to her?
Oh, I would say you're a little legend.
Listen to your mom.
Listen to your mom. I feel like I would tell her, it's hard because I'm like, in one breath, she always trusted herself, but then I would always say, like, trust yourself. Because I think I always also tried to impress a lot of people, but the people closest to me, so my mom or my dad or my coaches and the people around me or the people who looked up to me. But I think knowing that your best is always enough because that's all you have to give. Like if both of our best is going to be different and I can't compare to you. So just knowing that your best is always going to be enough, and if you're giving your best every training session, and also knowing that like your best is going to be different every session. So it's like you're giving 100% every session, but that 100% is going to be different every time. And it's like putting your one foot in front of the other every training session. I'm talking to the athlete in me, by the way.
Well, it's just like don't let a result sheet determine how you felt your performance was.
And don't let anyone else dimmer your light on your goals because it'll change your mindset.
And it'd be such a hard thing in a judge sport as well.
Yeah.
Because like you could give 100%, you could feel amazing and then they go, no.
Yeah.
And you're like, well.
So I think bodybuilding's so toxic.
Yeah.
But yeah, in acro, like you're put in a leotard and then you're put on stage to be judged on your appearance and your skills and the way you execute everything. So of course it's going to come into play in your mind. But if you can walk off that field or stage or pitch, whatever, and go, I've done my best and whatever that score shows, I have to be happy with because that's all I had to give. And if you didn't, then how can you improve and give more? But that's in you. Like you have to know that you had more to give. Not because the score sheet didn't say what you wanted it to say.
The self-awareness in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which also comes with maturity and age. So we can't have it all.
You can. It just takes time.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of time.
Definitely.
When's the happiest you've ever been and how have you felt like you've stayed either in that state or gotten back to it?
That's really tough. I would say there's 2 phases to this because I think the happiest I'd ever been was training for Worlds as much as it was the hardest time.
You're also so broken in those moments. That's crazy to me that you say that after saying what you were going through.
Not before World Cup, before Worlds. So before I had gone through this, like the
system,
the transformation. Yeah. So it was more, it was just really hard training, but I was like, I was in the like the thick of training hard and I just thrived off it. I loved it so much. So I would definitely say that was just, I just loved that. I was so happy then. But then I'd also say the last year, since moving to Gold Coast, I'd say I definitely think moving to Adelaide and having that transformation changed a lot, changed absolutely everything. But it was such a journey. Whereas now I feel like I have my health. It's still in progression with working on my skin and getting regular periods and stuff like that. Like, that's still in process, but I know I'm on the right path and I'm doing what I'm meant to be doing. And I know that because I always get messages. I'm very spiritual and I know that I'm in alignment with what I'm doing, but then I also have the perfect people around me. And I said this on our podcast recently, but I was like, on my 23rd birthday, I'd felt the happiest, and these people I'd met in the last year. The only person I'd knew for longer than what I'd lived in Gold Coast for was Jackson and Lily. So the rest, I was like, these are my people and I've met them in the last year. And I think that's because I found who I was, so I could align with the people that align with me. And I always get the question, how do you find the right friends? How do you find your people? And it's like, if you don't know yourself, you're not going to find those people because they won't know who you are. So I think this last year has been just phenomenal.
I think you just live to your values and do the things that you enjoy. And totally. Lo and behold, that other people will be doing the same.
Mm-hmm.
And they're your people.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. And I feel like the Gold Coast has this sped up effect.
Yeah.
Because me and my housemate were actually talking about this morning. And there's people you'll meet on a walk or at the gym. And then within two interactions, you're booking a trip somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's like.
Literally.
It's just how it is.
Yeah.
And it's just people have this, I think it's very transparent up here. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to see through if someone's bullshitting or not bullshitting or where their intention is.
Yeah.
And I think when you do see clearly in people, it's like, okay, you're a good person. I see that. And then it's just easy to attach to those people.
Yeah, 1,000%.
But that's definitely sped up here.
Yeah. It's no, and nothing is like it on the Gold Coast.
No, it's a different world.
Yeah, it really is.
I was going to say, what's your future now look like? Are you obviously in coaching still, and that's a massive goal. Would you like to go over to another world championships as a coach and see one of your students stand on the podium for themselves?
So
your eyes lit up there. Say less.
I'm not coaching what I once trained in. I'm coaching now dancers doing acro, more strength and conditioning, but I have just recently launched athlete mentoring, which I always knew I'd do, and I've been working on it since 2020, but this year felt right to launch it. So basically, yeah, I've launched myself as an elite as an athlete mentor, purely because I see the gap in what I missed out on, but I also missed out on it because it wasn't being taught and it wasn't being spoken about. So it makes sense, but I just want to be that person who can inspire athletes to see their full potential and to realize the power of their mind. I think mindset is just absolutely everything in athletes, in life, in relationships, in everything. And so I think when younger athletes can realize that, it'll change their career. So I really want to push that and speak to as many athletes as I can. So that's kind of, I've just launched it, but it's like a year process. Like, I've got big goals for that towards the end of the year around athlete mentoring. I always feel like I'm never finished competing, but I also don't see myself competing again. So I'm not sure.
You never know if you get the call.
Yeah. You never know.
The back of your mind, you're like, maybe.
Yeah. I did get selected to train for Cirque du Soleil back in 2021. But due to COVID, I couldn't make it happen. So maybe that'll happen.
Floats around the back of your mind, though.
Yeah, it does. I just think I was never done as an athlete. And I knew I wasn't when I retired, but I knew I needed a break. And that's all I wanted it to be, was a break. But then COVID happened and it led to coaching. And I moved to Adelaide and Queensland and it all just changed. And I freaking love coaching.
There's more there.
Yeah. So we'll see.
I just don't think never say never.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, if something could pop up that's perfect and you just keep the door open, and if you want to walk through it, walk through it. If you don't, you don't. It doesn't matter so much.
And I know that if I don't, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the last big question. Well, it's not really a question, but I was going to say, talk about you and Lily.
What about us?
That's what I mean. I don't have a direct question. What would you say your relationship is with?
We're best friends.
Yeah.
We met through Jackson and Lily's ex-boyfriend who played footy together. And we met doing nothing that we're doing now, which is so cool. So we just met as like two regular chicks figuring out life in our early 20s. And now we have a podcast together. We both have, you know, a following on social media. We're both doing YouTube. We both share so many passions with health and fitness and mindset and life that we just want to help inspire others. And so doing life with her, like doing business with her, doing life with her, we live together. We do everything together, but just we've been best friends since the day we met. Like we talk more than we talk to our boyfriends, and they sometimes get really annoyed. Well, her ex did. She's single now and she lives with me and Jackson, but our dynamic is something I've never had before. The relationship that we have, the honesty that we have is wild, because I've never had that in a friendship, and the way that we've grown as people but also together is just so cool. And then her and Jackson have a great relationship, and our whole friendship group is so solid, and yeah, it's so cool.
That's epic. It's cool to see, since even obviously meeting you girls when you came and recorded in here, just like the dynamic and
yeah,
and everything. That's been awesome.
It just works so well.
It works really well.
Yeah.
I was going to say, don't really ask this, but do you have a favorite quote you'd like to end on that you can think of off the top of your head? I don't normally ask this, but if you've got one.
Well, I have the one I have tattooed, "Everything Happens for a Reason," which has just been like since I started ACRA, it's like the thing we've said. So that would be like my number one that I just go by. But the one recently that I've really hung on to is, and I don't want to butcher it, but it goes, I don't want to butcher it.
No, we got time.
It's really simple. So I always get the words mixed up, but it's literally like, the risk you don't take is the biggest risk. Something along the lines of that. But I recently stepped into this because I booked a solo trip to LA. And I literally leave next week. And once I booked it, I was like, holy shit, have I done the right thing? Have I done the wrong thing? I need confirmation. Will I ever get confirmation? No, I just have to go with it because it's a calling that I've had and I just need to do it. But I just really think about, yeah, not taking the risk is your biggest risk. You never know where something could lead you. And I think if you have a calling for something, it's there for a reason. Mm-hmm. And if it's been put on your heart, it's been there for a reason.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I heard this thing, it says, your intuition may lead you wrong, but it's still the only thing that's ever led you right.
Yes. So it's like always listen to your intuition.
If there's something telling you to do something, go do it. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know now, go do something else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Miss Tori Story, thank you for coming onto the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I hope everyone enjoyed that. If people are still listening, want to leave a 5-star review for Tori and myself?
Yes.
On Spotify or Apple. Wherever you listen to podcasts, wherever you're listening to this, leave a review, let us know what you think. And yeah, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me, and I'll see you next time.
I was going to say, you'll see me in be back in that swivelly chair.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. I need to really go get another one.
You do.
You just want to move, don't you?
Yeah, it's so good.
Sick. Thank you, Tori.
Bye.
See you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.